Have you ever felt warned by something that wasn't there? Why do some places feel divided, light on one side and heavy on the other? What if folklore isn't superstition, but instruction? Would you sleep on a field if locals warned you not to? Not for legal reasons, but for supernatural ones. If a stranger knew your name before you spoke, how would you rationalize it? And what would you do if your door was rattled at 2 a.m. and no one walked away? Today, we hope to find at least some of the answers to those questions on this episode of The Dark Paranormal.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal with Kevin Eustace.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back already to our midpoint of the season. It's bizarre how quickly it always feels to get to the midpoint of a season, but this season, it feels really bizarre. Possibly because of the changes, but it feels like we literally started this season yesterday. I guess there's some truth to the adage when you try something new, time seems to go faster, because that definitely feels like my experience. But here we are, halfway through season 23. Now, if you have your own personal paranormal experience and you think, well, I won't submit it until the end of the season, maybe it will get on next season. Yes, maybe it will. But for those who've listened to this show for long enough, they know that this show is very fluid, and if the right experience comes through, who knows, you may even find yourself as the finale episode of this season. So please don't hold back on sending your experiences through by clicking the link in the show notes or going direct to thedarkparanormal.com/submitmyexperience. Now, I appreciate we have several new listeners to the show, so firstly, welcome, and thank you for joining us here on what is becoming one of the longest-running paranormal podcasts to do with true dark experiences out there. So welcome, and if you like what you hear, you can always become a member of our Patreon team. There is a link in the show notes, which will give you access to a free week trial to Patreon at our highest tier, giving you access not only to Dark Bites, our Patreon-only show, but also its back catalogue of well over 180 hours worth of Patreon-only material. Or you can go direct to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And of course, there's other perks such as ad-free episodes, early releases, etc., and a forum that is coming out this week where our wonderful community who have built what I believe to be the best community to do with the paranormal anywhere online can start mingling amongst themselves. And believe me, I know I say this, but it's the truth. If I wasn't the host, I'd be a member of the Patreon solely for that community. I can take no responsibility for how good the people on that community are. They are just like-minded, interested people in the paranormal, with nothing but respect for each other's opinion and point of view. So, two very important links in the show notes today. But right now, it's time. Lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable, and of course, leave your disbelief at the door as we enter the field of the Fae. Hi, Kevin. My name's Yari, but my first name is Genuine, although others will recognize themselves and their names have been changed. From June to August of 2024, I was on a workaway trip in Ireland. Most of that trip was spent on an isolated homestead in Western County Cork. I can't openly share the location, so I won't be naming specific locations around it either. In a nutshell, though, this homestead is built amidst a couple of farms as far as the valley reaches. There's a small village, or a hamlet rather, about an hour's walk to the west of it. And the nearest by my Dutch standards, small town, about an hour east by car. This homestead sits along a rural road, one that leads up to a former spiritual retreat, which sits practically across the road from the gate you have to enter to go to the homestead. Next to that set of buildings making up the former retreat sits a farm of an old lady and her son. This is all within a 5 to 10 minute walk of the gate. The next nearest farm is a 25 minute walk in the other direction. And if you continue further down that road, about 50 minutes from the gate, is a field with a Bronze Age ring fort next to the place we had to fetch our wood from. So we'd pass by there about once a week. Now with that said, I should add that the homestead itself is situated on a plot of land where the owner was starting a small community of like-minded people. Though while I was there, there was only one other permanent resident, as the others had gone elsewhere to work and save up for building on this plot of land. There had previously been more occupants, so the plot had a selection of semi-permanent and more permanent structures on it, among which the main kitchen building, at the core of this community space. Some distance behind it, around a bend and in the footpath, and tucked away directly out of sight, sat a caravan where I would stay, and a few meters beside that was a stranded van, one which was turned into a small library. It was outfitted with a solar panel and battery to recharge your phone or laptop. From the perspective of the kitchen, across from it on the other side of the communal open space, is the roundhouse of my host, the permanent resident on the plot, tucked up away a bit up the hill amongst some of the trees. Off to the left on the other side of the tree line were the gardens and polytunnels, beyond which was the caravan and polytunnel home of the owner, who was off to his homeland to earn some more money as mentioned. Further down the path, all the way down the hill, sat another abandoned roundhouse, from a fellow I'll come back to later. Behind the caravan I would be staying at was a cabin being built. The fellow doing the work would occasionally pop by to work in it, and we'd help him when we could. Down the path from there, likewise down the hill but not as far as the roundhouse, which would still be maybe another 500 meters away, was another small cabin. This cabin, as well as the upstairs area of the kitchen and the caravan I stayed at, were all reserved for workawayers like myself, some of which came by while I was there. Right, now you have a vague understanding of this plot of land. It's a couple of acres, sat on a rather big hill and spanning half a valley off to one side. Enough that a walk along the whole path from the gate to the furthest roundhouse would maybe take about a half an hour. And now I can begin to finally start to share my experience. Firstly, 2 weeks after I arrived, we visited the ring fort prior to picking up some firewood. I can't say definitively that this was the cause for the following incident, but it seems rather oddly coincidental it took place a day later. The caravan in which I was housed had a door with a separate top and bottom half. The bottom half fit in the doorpost, but didn't have any way to stay shut, other than friction. The top half did not fit properly in the frame anymore, so the friction of the bolt of the lock had to keep the door shut. The internal latch was a little horizontal metal handle. Externally, it was a vertically oriented sheet metal tab recessed into the door, so other than humans, nothing could reasonably be expected to pull on that tab. The caravan itself was small. Three windows on the bedside, the left end of the caravan, and one window to the right, as seen from the door. The window on the right of the door, as well as at the foot at the end of my bed, and the door itself were all visible from my perspective where I lay in bed. Since those windows faced the path, passing the caravan, and the door obscured my line of sight to the library van, I could see anyone coming up to the caravan at any time. That said, that night following our visit to the Ring Fort, it was a terribly stormy night. Immense gusts of wind, to the point that the top half of the door was flung open by the wind. So I had to keep it shut by hooking an elastic band to the inside latch and to the potbelly stove on the other end. That way, the door stayed shut throughout the night. The next night, the sky was clear, and I mean clear. Clear to the point you could see everything by moonlight. Almost as clear as the day. More importantly, it was wind still. As in, no wind. Nothing. No leaves, no grass making any noise. Just pure silence. Around what must have been 2 a.m., I woke up in what I can only describe as utter panic. No idea why, but everything felt like I should not move a muscle. I was absolutely terrified, but for no reason I could think of, until, after laying there for what I think was maybe 2 minutes, though it felt much longer, I heard steps on the gravel of the path leading to the caravan. But oddly enough, it was only maybe 1, 2, or 3 steps. I listened intently, trying to think who or what might possibly be outside at that hour. And, of course, feeling so terrified, I was also trying to think what I had to hand to defend myself, should it come down to that. I was interrupted, however, by the outside latch of the door being rattled immensely hard. But the door itself was not opened. The elastic band was on there, sure, but if you'd pull that tab hard, the door would open. But it didn't. So it was almost like someone held the door shut with one hand and rattled the lock with the other. This sent me further into a fright than I already was. Who or whatever it was felt terrifying, even without me seeing anything or hearing anything except for that lock rattling. It felt like it continued for an hour. In truth, it can't possibly have been more than 20 seconds. Then, suddenly, silence. And after what must have been about 3 or 4 minutes of silence, I heard the sliding door of the library van open. I'd closed it before going to bed. And then, more silence. Before, sure enough, another 1 or 2 steps. But I never saw anyone walk either way past the caravan. Not towards the cabin, which I would have seen pass directly in front of the window, nor towards the kitchen building, which would have also been visible for me, looking out of the window at the foot of my bed. I cannot make this clear enough. There are only 2 ways to get to the caravan. The rest is closed off by extremely dense underbrush and trees, and a several-meter drop-down rocky cliff face, covered in dense brush, which closed off the plateau the caravan sat on 3 sides. To this day, I am not sure what rattled that lock that night, or why on earth it felt so immensely oppressive and terrifying. I've had many other paranormal experiences before this, none of them as frightening as this one. But this was but one of several occurrences. During the remainder of my stay, I heard that 3-step noise quite a few more times. Sometimes on the gravel around the kitchen, sometimes in the bush in the tree line between the kitchen and the gardens, sometimes in the long grass around the caravan. Though never again at night, nor did I wake up any other night during the rest of my stay there. Though it soon became apparent one side of the homestead felt off. It's hard to describe, but neither my host nor I could make any progress on a building project on that side, while on the other side of the kitchen building projects took seemingly no effort. In early August, a storm hit the area again. I was sat in the library van whilst thunder struck several spots nearby. One strike hit the trees around the roundhouse of my host. I texted him to see if he was okay. He was. But another strike hit the main house of the old spiritual retreat across the road. But since it was abandoned, it was the elderly neighbour on the farm next to it who called in the fire that was started by the lightning strike. The main house was burnt out beyond saving by the time the brigade arrived, and a power line a few lines over the hill was likewise struck, knocking out the mains power of several farms for at least a day or two. Though, weirdly, that main house was arguably the lowest building in the area. Everything else was higher up on the hills around it. Why would lightning strike an old stone house in the bottom of a valley? Whilst there were several buildings directly next to it that stood a great deal higher. Trees next to it that were significantly taller. Well, in hindsight, I think I know why. Though I'd be happy to hear anyone with better knowledge of physics to explain why it might have been. As for the explanation, I believe to have found, as it turns out, there are several ley lines crossing through the area. One splits the homestead in two. One side does feel negative, which was the side we could not get any work done on. The ley line crosses straight through the middle of the kitchen building. Oddly enough, there's a 2-meter-wide strip down the center of that building where you have no phone signal, but you do on either side of that 2-meter strip. And that same line runs straight through the house that was struck. Not just that, but it intersects with another line right where the house is. So it would appear, to me at least, that these energy lines intersecting caused the lightning to strike precisely there. I suspect this is the same reason why the main house was built precisely there, given the spiritualist origins of that compound, and that building in particular. However, that's purely my theory. Let's have a quick break to talk to you about Acorns. Acorns wants to show a little love to everyone who's on their way to some money goal. Now, a money goal may sound like something everyone has, but believe me, they don't. And even when you think you do, you don't really take into account the step-by-step incremental measurements that need to be made in order to achieve said goal, which is something I personally don't have the time to do. This is where Acorns do their magic, because they try to take you from where's my money today to that goal. And the way they do that is they focus on where your money is going to be tomorrow. There's two major things I want to point out with this. You don't need a bundle of cash to invest. You can invest your spare change. And the second thing is, I'm fortunate enough that the money I've invested, I've seen grow. And using the app, I can see that visually. They also have a potential screen. It shows you the power of compounding your money and how by doing so, you could grow it over time. Basically, for me, Acorns is an all-in-one. Invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 40 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/docparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 11 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investment involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/docparanormal. I had no further experiences on that plot of land until the day before I left, although I can explain that one away. Rather, I'd like to move some miles north, to a farm in East County Galway, where I spent a number of nights next to a fairy field. It is a truly remarkable place, and you can find lots of information about it on YouTube, although I will not mention it here. However, if you wish, Kevin, I can tell you exactly where it is. The farm is practically split in two by a railway. That will be significant. On this farm, anyone can stay to camp out on the field if they'd like. Just bring a tent, a caravan, or something like it, and you're good to go. The camp section is fenced off from the main field. This prevents the livestock from wandering into it. And if you take the path to the left, you'll head down to what the farmer calls the fairy field. The field itself has been left to itself by him and his forefathers. None of them dare touch anything there, as they truly believe it to be fairy territory, and thus it's not to be messed with, rather to be treated with the respect that it's due. On entering it, there are two hills, both are man-made. One is a grave mound, likely of some Bronze Age king or nobleman. The slightly larger hill next to it, and the height difference is only a metre or so, has a little nubbin on top. This hill was made with earth gathered just a few metres away, where there's now a similarly sized lake. But remarkably, this hill has a tunnel in it. Its entrance has long since collapsed, but some years ago, an archaeological team checked both mounds with a LiDAR scan, which proved one hill has a burial chamber within. The other holds a tunnel. There have been a few archaeological finds on and around the field in the past. The exact purpose of this second hill is unknown, but the farmer does not allow anyone to dig in it, for fear of angering the fairies. Which brings me nicely to the next few locations on said field. Along the stone wall that you have to pass through to enter the field sits an immense old hawthorn tree, a fairy tree, according to the farmer. He tends to call it a portal, and oddly enough, I concur that it is. Not in the physical sense, but to just touch it and close your eyes, you're likely to experience something that is so remarkable it cannot be put into words. And the experience differs per person. Moreover, it differs each time you do it. I've done it maybe about 6 times, and each time the experience was different. But calling it a portal seems justified. Across from that tree is a hill with a fairy fort on top. A collection of weirdly placed trees. Almost a circle, but not quite. But in any case, this whole farm is prone to various paranormal occurrences. People have tried to sleep on the fairy field, but they were scared off in the middle of the night. But each person refuses to tell the farmer what scared them. Likewise, people have sighted apparitions, even a puka, sometimes individuals, occasionally a whole group at once. But most commonly they're chased by the farmer, as you would expect. All that said, my own experiences, that tree aside, were quite different. First, I tried to sleep on the fairy field, being absolutely stupid enough to try to find out what scared those who tried before. And well, I did not sleep there. Why? Well, I spent the evening sitting around a bonfire with the farmer and some other guests who were staying at the camping area of the farm. When I finally decided to head back to my tent, which was set up on the fairy field, I followed the farmer back to the house where I had my phone on the charger, and to get a lamp so I could make my walk back to the field easier. But as I walked down the path, back towards the campsite where the others were, a pure white fox with red ears, climbed over the wall to my right, crossed the path I was on, looked at me, and then darted into the field to my left, disappearing in the underbrush. A feeling overcame me in that instant, something that told me not to tempt fate, so to speak. An extremely strong sensation of, do not go to the field. You should not be there right now. And I decided to heed it. You see, despite being daft enough to want to try and find out what scared those other people away in the past, I obviously suspected it would be the fairies who did. I am familiar enough with the folklore, both Irish and Welsh, to know that you respect the fairies' wishes, if they make them known. And of course, I figured this fox was exactly that. In fact, in hindsight, I later realized where I recognized that white fur, red ears aspect from. The Mabinogi, a collection of Welsh folkloric stories written down by monks in the 13th century, quite possibly dating back as far as the Iron or even Bronze Age as oral tradition, in which the hounds of the other world, and later a boar, would be described as being pure white with red ears. In other words, fairy scent animals. Being ultra-rational, I suppose I could chalk this up to my brain manifesting that aspect onto an otherwise ordinary fox due to my state of mind. But I sincerely do not believe that to have been the case. I was not under the influence of any substances. I could not have been more sober than I was, nor was I exhausted or even freaked out at the prospect of seeing something unbelievable, until seeing that fox. That was but one part of the experience, however. A few days later, I remained on the farm, made my rounds over the fairy field by day. I made up my mind to leave, and a woman turned up to the campsite. She got out of her car with her dog. She walked straight up to me. I was just making an early dinner at the bonfire, and asked me if I knew where the farmer was. I answered he was out of the field with an American tourist, which was almost a daily occurrence, and that he'd likely be back in a few moments. Then she introduced herself and asked for my name. But as she shook my hand and I opened my mouth to tell her my name, she interrupted me and said, "Oh, hold on. I know already. You're Yari." I was, of course, left stunned. Moreover, she then asked where I was from, but again, she answered by the time I'd opened my mouth, and correctly at that. Thing is, she hadn't yet spoken to the farmer or his wife. She'd literally driven up to the farm. I was the first person there, the first person she interacted with. I'd never heard or seen this woman before. But she explained that she was a medium of sorts, and that in conversation, she asked me if I would mind if she walked into the field for a bit. I said, of course, as long as the dogs kept on a lead. Before setting off, though, she pointed basically dead in the direction of the fairy field, which from our point was obscured by trees and the base of the hill with the fort on, which the railway cuts in two, and just said, "What's over there? I feel there are some very strong energies over there." Just as I answered, a train passed by, to which she remarked with a somewhat angry undertone, "Ah, that's been placed there to disrupt the energies here." Moments later, she beelined straight towards the corner of the field that pointed the fairy mound. She stuck around there for about 20 minutes before returning to the campsite to set up her car in a better spot to spend the night. Then the farmer returned, and we went to the house, only to join her and me at the bonfire for the night. After some talk between the three of us about all sorts of experiences, beliefs, and so on, he went home, and she and I remained at the bonfire until she decided she'd go out to the tree that stands in the corner that you went to earlier, so she could have some sort of ceremony or ritual. It's hard to describe. But she headed out into the darkness with nothing more than a few candles and a small gong. She was visible in the candlelight, walking, then dancing around that tree, maybe 200 meters away or so, whilst I heard all sorts of movement around me. Movement I'd usually only hear humans make. But no matter where I looked, I saw nothing at all. Eventually, she disappeared out of the candlelight's range, and although I didn't want to disturb her, I cast my light towards the tree. I searched around to find her, and sure enough, I managed to find her all right. But when I saw her in the light, an apparition appeared at the edge of the candlelight's range. Now I should reiterate, the only way to get to that corner is if you either come from the fairy field and have walked all the way around, passed over the bridge, over the railway, and made it all the way to the corner, or to head up there from the path that comes from the house, then past me and onto the corner. But no one had passed me. So whatever this apparition was, and I can't possibly say I could tell what it was, except it appeared human in shape, had to have come from the other way, but without any use of light, in a night so dark I could hardly see more than 20 meters ahead of me, while in range of the bonfire, mind you. So that seemed unlikely. The next morning, I woke up to see her walking her dog past the caravan I stayed in. There was one there too for people who didn't bring a tent of their own, and she got in her car before heading off. Later, I spoke to the farmer, and he mentioned that she'd briefly spoken to him that morning, and that she said she'd seen a white lady. Now, I can only presume that that was the apparition I saw, though I can't say for certain. To me, at least, it did not look white. More like a sort of shadow, standing at the edge of the range of the candlelight. Either way, after that I made my way back to County Cork, and met a new fellow at the homestead. Some weeks later, I returned to the farm together with him, as I was invited to join a gathering of the folks who were there when I initially arrived there, and we had a great time, though I once again made the apparently foolish decision to try and sleep on the fairy field. This time, however, my friend and I were on the field just as the sun began to set, and you could feel the whole mood of the field shift in an instant. I was in the process of setting up my tent near the portal tree, and because I suddenly felt so uneasy, I decided I would check with the tree whether I'd be okay to stay. I know that sounds ridiculous, but if you'd seen what I've seen and believed what I believe, it makes sense. I closed my eyes and I touched the tree, and I heard and felt the earth tremble, as if a massive horse had just come thundering towards me. It made me feel extremely uneasy, once more overcome with that sense of, you should not be here right now. My friends said they felt the same, even though I had not told them of what I'd felt or heard or experienced. I packed my tent back up and we beat a hasty retreat. We exited the field, and some meters after passing the wall, he asked me, Yari, do you hear that? What? I replied. To which he said, I can hear a horse running at us, but I can't see any. To which I could only reply, we better quicken our pace a bit. And then explained my experience at the tree as we made our way back towards the bridge. I need to clarify, the farmer only had horses on the house side of the railway at that time, none of which were large enough to produce that sound. nor the sound my friend described as we made our way back. There was no horse in a 200, maybe 300 meter range of us. There just wasn't. The biggest animal in that range were sheep. Small sheep at that. We got back to the campground and the farmer asked why I'd returned prematurely. I relayed the entire experience to him and he remained entirely unbothered. Since that night, he won't let anyone sleep at the fairy field. He permitted me to try so because I felt like I was called to the farm for some reason, which is why I went there in the first place. But he said he won't do it anymore. People can stay freely at the campground. He charges no money for anyone. He doesn't promote the field. He has no monetary incentive to promote his farm or share stories of it. Though he's happy to share his experiences and those of visitors with anyone who does visit. And many tour guides taking tourists on tours throughout Galway will stop at his farm for a visit. But he doesn't charge for his talks. He's just a farmer. So he insists. Nothing more. I have much more to tell. If you are interested in hearing my experiences from before I took this trip, I'd be happy to share them. And likewise, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Kind regards, Yari. Wow. Well, Yari, there's two things I want to say. Firstly, thank you so much for giving us such a truly paranormal episode for our midpoint of this season. And I think genuinely, it's possibly our second fairy story ever in over 340-odd episodes. So thank you ever so much. Secondly, call it serendipity. But there are lots of theories and superstitions around the fae folk. Even mentioning their name can cause issues, etc. And they will always want to be known, and when they want to be known, they will make themselves known, and other superstitions along those lines. Now, interestingly, Yari, you were not our first choice for this episode, but on Wednesday, when I finished recording episode 5, and I was doing some editing on it, I received an email from the person who submitted that story, telling me they didn't want the story to be aired anymore. Which, yes, was frustrating given the amount of time gone into it, but also understandable when I read the reasons why. And I just find it a bit spooky that the story that replaced it is of the Fae. It's as if the Fae has someone out there listening right now they're trying to get a message to. If I was on my ultra-believer mode, that's where I'd be pointing. But of course, I'm just buying into the alleged fantasy. And I do say alleged because I don't want to incur the wrath of something that I do believe many people have incurred the wrath of. So with the utmost respect, as they say in the Isle of Man, when you use a certain bus to cross over the ferry bridge and the bus driver rings a bell and a recorded message says, "Remember to say thank you to the fairies," and you think it's a touristy thing, but all of the locals on the bus at the same time say, "Thank you, fairies," as the fairies allow them to cross the bridge. So, thank you, fairies, for allowing me to air this episode unencumbered. And once more, thank you, Yari. But thank you to you all for joining us for this wonderful episode. And as we enter the second half of this season, as we tend to like to do, we try to heat things up from here on in as we head towards the finale. You could still feature as that finale if you believe you have an experience which is truly terrifying, true, and personal to you. You can go to the show notes, click the link, and submit that story. And also, anyone interested in joining our Patreon, to join what I believe is the best community online about the paranormal, the link is also in the show notes. But until next time, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try to leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.